related to the question that how does a person know that their tefillah is what did it? Because again, we're being shown here that if it's true that my tefillah did it, there's an Amalek who's going to be trying every trick in the book to convince me that my tefillah didn't do it. Or if my tefillah did do it, he's going to try to get me to forget it 1 second later to make like it never happened. The answer is, there are times that each person is shown certain things by Hashem, which if the person has any degree of honesty, they will have to admit that this is Shaloi Kederachat, this is not normal. This is not flow of the mill, that things should happen in such and such a way. Unfortunately, there are many people, there are people that try to twist that. Rav Moshe Rabbeinu writes in the Talmud of the Kedeman, there are people that try to take all miracles and show that it was scientific coincidence, scientific, all kinds of excuses for it. But an average person who has a certain degree of tmimus and pshitus and an honesty about them will be able to see sometimes that certain things happen which are clearly not normal, or even somebody else will point out to them that this is totally irregular, and to know that that item came as a result of tefillos, not as a result of natural means. I'll give you a tiny example. I once had an issue related to the tzion of Rabbeinu Zal. There was once, about 13 years ago, there was a situation where the Russians came up with a new five-year plan, as they did in those days, and the five-year plan was to build an apartment building complex, the city of Uman, where Rabbeinu Zal was buried. So they came up with a plan, and they started digging over there, and word came out from Russia that Breslov is being given a choice. Either you remove Rabbeinu Zal's sin from the premises there, period. Otherwise, we can't guarantee that it's going to be around after this project, because there's a big project, and could be it won't be touched, could be it will. There's going to be tractors. At the time, there was a whole major, major project that was done to protect the tzion. One piece of it was that there was a rabbi in America, mention his name, Latoyva, Rav Pinchas Taitz, Shlita, who had connections in Russia, and he had connections in the American government, because when Carter was running for president, Carter, who was a peanut farmer from Georgia, there were about 1.5 people in the United States that believed that this guy could ever become president, because they thought that there's still some normal people in the United States. Who would ever vote the peanut farmer from Georgia, make him the mamuna over the United States of America? So organizations at that time, which usually play up to these guys when these guys are running for elections, this, that, they, you know, they wine and dine them so that if this guy gets elected, he'll remember that we treated him warmly and he'll help us out. This guy, nobody was welcoming, everybody was ignoring him pretty much. And this one rabbi decided not to take a chance. So he invited him to come to his city and to speak, and he gave him some kovod and everything. And afterwards, he got a letter from one of Carter's aides, a guy by the name of Bob Lifshitz, saying that should we ever be able to be of service to you in any way, they thanked him very much for the kovod and warmth that was shown to them, and should we ever be able to have help to you, we'll be happy to. About 3 years later, we approached Rabbi Taitz, Breslov approached Rabbi Taitz for help regarding this crisis, and he said, you should know that 3 years ago I received, what happened was that this was exactly at the time that the SALT talks was scheduled to take place in Geneva between Carter and Brezhnev. That was exactly when this whole thing was cooking. So the decision in Breslov was that we have to try, when these guys get together for a big meeting like that, besides the SALT talks, there's all kinds of smaller items that are exchanged between them. Whenever two world leaders get together to meet on a particular issue, there's other issues which they swap things and everything. So our mission was to try to get our issue to be one of those issues that Carter would present to Brezhnev at those soul talks as something to be willing to give. P.S. Rabbi Taitz spoke to this Bob Lifshitz, in other words, he was mafil him, and this Bob Lifshitz got back to us saying that this item was presented in Geneva. This item was mentioned, that he succeeded in getting this into Carter's hands, and we ended up going to Russia afterwards and being told in Russia that this site will not be touched at all whatsoever, no matter what building. And you see, if you go there today, there's about 15 large apartment buildings all over the place. And there's these two little houses in the middle that look like the most silly, ridiculous thing in the area. And in the backyard of one of those little houses is Rabbeinu Zal's sin. P.S. As soon as Rabbi Teitz got back from Russia, the New York Times of the following day, front page on the New York Times, was a picture of Carter with his aides, a picture that they took when he was first coming into office, saying that Carter decided to fire 7 of his aides. Among them, number 3 or number 4 was Bob Lifshitz. Now, Rabbi Teitz, when he got that, with this, I called him at the time. I went from Russia to Eretz Yisrael, and he went from Russia back to America. And I called him from Eretz Yisrael to America to be in touch after this happened. When he told me this news, Rabbi Teitz said, "Look what Reb Nachman did over here. Look how this Bob Lifshitz had to be in the position that he was in to accomplish a particular item. As soon as he did what he did, he was of no longer service to Hashem. Hashem didn't need him anymore as part of the Carter administration. The next day, zip, he's out. Not out because he's a bad boy. He wasn't necessary anymore. He was put there for a particular purpose." You know, mentioning that as an example, the Sarada Shikun thing. Person could need something in such a place, and then suddenly a person finds out that their next door neighbor happens to work there, and they happen to be looking at this guy's file 2 days ago. Nothing, they didn't know that the guy was applying for a mashkin, nothing. They happen to see it, and they happen to be able in 2 seconds to get the information, which this other person normally could take a month to try to work through the red tape of trying to get that information. This is a Maisa Shoya that I know Maisa on, and each one of us, if we'll search our minds, if we'll clear off the Amalek dust from our brains, we'll be able to remember the things that we saw in our lives where tefillos for different things Hashem gave the answers. Elamai, the problem is that as long as that we're living in this world, Hashem has to be malbish, the solution in the teva. So it's not that you get to see this white ghostly figure coming and saying, ooh, let me give you your solution to your tefillos. You get to see a guy wearing a three-piece suit or a monkey suit or a normal people and talking, and so that the Satan can try to pervert people's minds and twist our minds into thinking, who knows, maybe Hashem really is out to lunch, and it's just that these things happen because it happened, you know, because it's coincidence. I mean, it happened to be it, that of the 2.5 million people that are in Misrata Shikun, the guy happened 2 days ago. I mean, what? Why shouldn't it happen that he should happen to pick this guy's name off the scale and look and know the exact status of this guy's mashkanta? The Alkain, the question was just raised, is it possible for a tefillah not to work? The answer is that there's a seeming contradiction in the Zohar HaKadosh. The Zohar HaKadosh makes one statement where it says regarding tefillah, zimnin de shama, zimnin de loy shama, that there are times that Hashem hears and there are times that Hashem doesn't hear. Then there's another place in the Zohar HaKadosh where it says, Les Re'usa Tavo de Isavid. That not only isn't there any such a thing as a tefillah going lost, but even a Rotzain Toiv, if a Jew has a good desire, that doesn't go lost. That's precious and it's effective. How do we correlate the two? There's a few answers that are given to this. One item is that Rabbeinu Zal says that Zimnin Deloy Shama means immediately. There are times that the person sees results more immediate, and there are times that it takes a longer period of time. Naama had to toivel in the river 7 times, Elisha Navi told him. The first 6 times, nothing happened. On the 7th time, the leprosy left him completely. That kind of concept. There's another completely different concept that Rabbeinu Zal explains in Likutei Moran, that there are certain times that there are super, super tefillos that are needed. For example, for gerim. Rabbeinu Zal shows in Likutei Moran that in order for converts to be able to happen and exist and survive, it takes incredible, incredible koyach. There are times that a Jew could be saying a tefillah for parnoso or for something else, and the Jew will give forth an exceptional good tefillah. And Hashem, instead of using the tefillah for the silly thing, relatively silly thing that the person's asking for, Hashem will take that tefillah and reroute it, and relabel it, and use it for a more important purpose on a global level, as far as Klal Yisrael is concerned. But even then, I've heard the Zakenim of Breslov say that doesn't mean that the tefillah won't affect at all the thing that you daven for. It means it'll take more time. That's it. Sometimes when you don't see immediate results, very often part of the tefillah is being used for something much, much more important in heaven. It's a lot to say on this. Excuse me? Exactly. It's being borrowed. Right.
What's the relation between the Amalek and...
The question is there a connection between Amalek and Chometz? And the answer is, Rabbein Azal has a term, Kutaman Turehei, in the Kutaman in the first Chelik, where he talks about Hirhurim of Avodah Zorah, like person have been skeptical about Hashem, that kind of thing, those kind of doubts, and that's called Chimutz Hamoyach, or Chimutz Halev. That's the terminology that's used about it. So there is a connection. Let's continue. And he explained, therefore, how the and tefillah is emuna, and the antithesis of emuna and b'chor is amolek, who is sofek, the opposite of emuna, and amolek, who is also b'chor, racious. He's called racious goyim, the first of all the nations of the goyim. V'alkein hoyo ikar yitzias mitzrayim aydei makas b'choros. It's for this reason that when the Yidden went out of Mitzrayim, the Makeh Bepatish, the final blow that busted the doors open for them to leave, was when Hashem took out their Bechorim. He wiped out the Bechorim of Mitzrayim. Ki al yidei kol hamoifsim loy nechna Paroi b'shleimus. Because with all the miracles that had happened earlier, Paroi didn't become subdued. The chizek es liboy, and he made his heart stubborn, ad shehev yolov makas b'choyrois, until Hashem inflicted makas b'choyrois, u b'choyrei Yisrael nitzaylu, and the Jewish firstborn was saved, u bozeh nichna b'chinas b'choyr de sitrachra. That's what caused the roish of the sitrachra to be subdued, v'nisalav and isgadeh b'chinas b'choyr de kdusha, and the b'choyr of holiness rose up. Shehu bechinas avoidas hatfila. We said earlier that bechor is synonymous with tefila. Vooz nizgale peulas tefilas Yisrael v'tzakosom kol yemei agolus. That was when the Egypt saw the results of all of those tefilos. They saw that the Jews left Egypt with such a bang. That bang is what took 210 years of crying and pain and suffering to prepare that bang. Here again, you want to prepare a firecracker? Takes a couple of minutes. You want to prepare a stick of dynamite? Or you want to prepare a 5,000 kilo of explosive? That takes a little more time, a little more money and effort. And when it goes off, you know the difference. And that's when Mitzrayim saw the results of all the tzaoka of the Yidden throughout the Golus. Va'oz nigalu v'yotzim Mitzrayim. Then they were redeemed and taken out of Mitzrayim. And it was when the Jews left Egypt, as soon as they left Mitzrayim, that's when Hashem says to them that the firstborn is declared holy. Right at the end of by Parshas Bishalach over there. At the end of Parshas Boy. Because Hashem always makes the Kedusha and the Tumah equal opposite forces. Ki kamoi sheyesh b'chinas b'chor b'kedusha, just as there is a concept of a b'chor of kedusha, b'chinas avodas hatfilo kanal, which is represented by davening, kamoi kein yesh b'chinas b'chor de sitra achra. There's also a b'chor in the side of tumo, shu b'chinas amolek, b'chinas reishes goyim amolek, haynu shebechinas klipas amolek hu mezgaber b'chol pam keneged b'chinas ha-b'chor d'kdusha shu ha-tfila. This klip of amolek, which is the b'chor of the sitrachra, is always trying to do battle against the b'chor of kedusha, which is tfila. Dehainu afilu kishe poyalim ezadover b'tfila, which means, even after a Jew is successful in accomplishing something through his tfila, shu b'chinas hoylodas ha-b'chor, which means this Jew produced his first item, his first child, the first result from his tefillah. Who mizgaber umachnes kfirois v'shikcho b'leiv. Amolek shines atheism and forgetfulness into the person's heart. Ke'ilu adayin lo yischal Hashem yisborach v'shmoy tefillah seklal. As if Hashem has never listened to my tefillah yet. I never saw anything come from all my praying. V'alkein nikra amolek reishis. This is why the Torah calls amolek reishis. Bechinas reishis goyim. Ki hu roitze lehizgabre keneged bechinas reishis. Because amolek is trying to do battle against the reishis of Kedusha. Shehu bechinas bechoyer, which is this firstborn. Ke'ilu adayin lo yishchel Hashem Yisboch laishia klal. He tries to convince the Jew that you have no children. Hashem never did anything for you yet. Umishom mibchinas reishis goyim amolek mishom hoyso yenikas b'choyrei Mitzrayim. And it's from this concept of the reishis of Amalek, that's where Egypt was plugged into. That's where Egypt was drawing its energy from. Its source was Amalek reishis. Ki Amalek koileil kol hoakum. Because Amalek is koileil all nations of the goyim. They're all of them rolled up into one is Amalek. Ubifrat Mitzrayim. And especially Mitzrayim has a special kesher to Amalek. Kisar shel Mitzrayim hu edoim shehu Amalek. Because the Gemara says that the angel of Egypt is Edoim, which is synonymous with Amalek. Because Amalek is a grandson of Esau, who is called Edoim. V'alkein, al yedei shehiko Hashem choyer Mitzrayim, through the fact that Hashem struck out at the firstborn of Egypt. That's what broke the kesher, the connection between Egypt and its source, which was Amalek, shekol hagoliyos al yodoi, where all the exiles that Klal Yisrael experiences all through this klipas Amalek. And that's what made it impossible for Amalek to feed stubbornness into Paro's heart, make him more stubborn and more stubborn. As soon as the Bechorim were wiped out, the connection between Egypt and Reishis Goy and Amalek was wiped out. And that's when Paro was forced to accept that the Jews, and agreed to allowing the Jews to leave. When? When the Bechor was wiped out. Bechor Mitzrayim. What's Bechor? Bechor is Amalek, and Amalek is the opposite of Tefillah, which is called Bechor. Aval machmas sha'amalek bi'atzmoi lo'y nofal adayin. However, because of the fact that Amalek himself had not yet been knocked down, Rak shenivsak yinikas paroi Mitzrayim imenu. It's only that the ability to draw from Amalek was cut off. The yinika of Mitzrayim from him was cut off. Al yidei arigas habchorim, through the destroying of the bechorim of Mitzrayim. The kanal, as we said earlier, al kein achar kach, achar sheyotzu hizgaber oid. That's why we find that when the Jews actually left Mitzrayim, Amalek came back for a second round. V'hofach eslev paroi v'avodov. And again, he caused Paroi and his servants to change, to have a change of heart, despite the fact that they had already agreed to let the Yidden out. V'omru, and they said, Ma zois asinu, what is this that we did to let the Jews out? V'chol zeh al yidei klipas Amalek. This is all caused by the klipa of Amalek, shechozar v'nesoyrer, which despite the fact that it had been suppressed a little bit, now it rose up again. Kihu misoyrer u'mizgaber b'chol pam, because this klipa of Amalek keeps coming back again and again. V'zeh she'isa b'medrash. This is why, interestingly, we find that the Medrash says, on the posuk v'yugat lemelech Mitzrayim ki borachom, that it was told to Paroi that the Jews had escaped. Notice, he had told them originally that they could leave for 3 days. Then somebody came and told them that the Jews aren't just leaving for 3 days. They're making tracks. The Medrash says, Shehamagid hoyo Amalek. It doesn't say in the Chumash who told Paroi, but the Medrash says it was Amalek that told Paroi. Why? Ki hamagid v'hamesis leparoi lemor sheYisrael borchu v'sheYisgaber lirdaf achrayim ze Amalek. The one who instigated, who turned Paroi on again to get up the desire to chase the Jews and everything, was bedafka this Amalek. kize maise amolek shizgaber bechol pam veyakchish hakoil veyachnis shikchotus and believe kilu lo yehoya adayin shum yeshua chasron kanam. Because this is what Amalek is famous for. He's the one that gets the Jews, or lahavdol the goyim, to forget that there was any Yeshua, that there was any Hatzlocha for the Jews, and thereby, to get them to give up hope on any Yeshua coming. How? By forgetting that there was ever a Yeshua. That's what causes them not to have the confidence in Hashem and in themselves that Hashem's going to help them. V'alkein, achar shenofal paroi v'cheloi bayam legamri. Now, when it comes to round three already, where paroi, not round three, round two, where the Egyptians suffered defeat in Egypt itself. Then the Yidden ran to the Yamsuf, and when Paroi and all the Egyptians were drowned in the Yamsuf, Acharkach bo alehem Amalek biatzmoi. Then Amalek went now by himself to attack the Jews, in other words, with his own armies, not working via Egypt anymore, but by himself. Kihu biatzmoi loy nichna dain kanal. Because Amalek did not become nichna. What was broken in the Makas Bechoiros, what was broken was the kesher between Mitzrayim and Amalek, not Amalek. Amalek wasn't broken, because we said that Amalek is called Bechoir, Rashis Goyim Amalek. Amalek is called Rashis. So you would think that could be as a result of Makas Bechoiros, Amalek's wiped out. But the answer is it's not. That wiped out the connection of Egypt to draw from him. That Yenika was wiped out, but Amalek was still around. V'alkein hiskaber hu biatzmoi, and therefore Amalek summoned up his own energies. V'loi hisstakel al kol hanefloys va'yishuos she'os Hashem yisbarach imonu, and he completely ignored all the success and victory that the Yidden had experienced. Ubo lihilochim k'negdam, and he came to fight against the Yidden. Ki hu bechinas reishis, because Amalek represents this top, shemizgaber k'neged bechinas bechoyer, who works, who battles against the bechoyer of kedusha, which is the koyach hatfila of Bnei Yisrael, shu bechinas reishis, shu bechinas avoidas hatfila kanal. And it's for this reason that Hashem himself has to do battle against this Amalek every generation. Why? Because a normal enemy gets a good zetz, you give him a good zetz, and he goes away in Gamarnu. Or let's say you get a real vicious guy. He goes through three or four beatings, he comes to attack three or four times, you beat him up three or four times, and he gives up. But this Amalek is relentless. And what Amalek is known for is this shikha, this clip of shikha, where he's able to blot out from his mind completely any victories that the Yidden had, any atzlocha that they had through tefillah, and that's why he just keeps coming back again and again. Now Rav Nosal says, this is the reason why the Chachamim taught us that before you say Shmon Esrei, the paragraph before the Shmon Esrei speaks about the Geulas, the redemption of the Jewish people. Shekoidem shenechnosim b'tfila lehispalil al tzorcheinu b'tfilas yudches, before we enter into the Shmon Esrei, where we're going to enumerate all of our specific needs, anu maskirim Geulas Mitzrayim, we mention the fact that we were taken out of Mitzrayim, Umazkirin Hachnoas Bechor de Setrachra, and we make mention of the fact that Hashem subdued the firstborn of the Setrachra of Mitzrayim, Kemashakosud, as we say, Kol Bechoreim Harokto, Uvechorcha Yisrael Golto. We mention the fact that Hashem killed all of their firstborn, whereas Hashem's own firstborn, the Jewish people, he didn't kill. Why do we say that? Why is that the introduction to the Shmon Esrei? Ubozeh onu mazkirin atzmenu mashepoalu Yisrael kvar betfilosim. The reason for mentioning that is to remind ourselves of what the Jews have already achieved through their tefillah. Shezehu bechinas hoylodas bechor dikdusha shu bechinas avoydas hatefillah. This is what we called earlier the birth of the firstborn, the first hatzlocha that a person had in tefillah, which until you've had that, You don't really have a starkeit when you're coming to daven. You're not powerful because you haven't seen any results yet. But if a person has already seen results from their tefillah, then when they come to daven a second time, they're coming with power. So therefore, the introduction to the Shmon Esrei is to mention our previous success in tefillah. How did the Jews go out of Mitzrayim? Vayitzaku Hashem, it says. They cried out to Hashem. Ki ayidezeh nischazek halev lispal kanal. This is what gives the person the motivation that they need to give forth a real good Shmon Esrei. The person knows he's going to say Shmon Esrei either way. But one way, he's going to say it like he's sleeping, weak, no power. And the other way, if he's reading that, oh, we were victorious in the Petah, then he's going to go into Shmon Esrei with strength. Therefore, it's right. That's the springboard from which we go into the Shmon Esrei. Ki ikar ha-hischaskus betfila hu'al-yidei b'chinas ho'ilodas b'chor. Because the main chizuk in tefillah is through the birth of the firstborn, shu'b'chinas ge'ulas Mitzrayim, which is symbolized by the Jews being taken out of Egypt. Meaning, by reminding ourselves of what we've already achieved through our tefillah, that's the main chizuk in tefillah. Now, how do we know that you need chizuk in tefillah? Because the Gemara says there are three things that need tremendous chizuk, and one of them is tefillah. A person would say, no, I'm pretty religious, I believe in Hashem, I believe in tefillah. That's nonsense. Today you believe and tomorrow you believe less. Or sometimes you're motivated, whereas if you would think of these things, it would motivate you 200%. Your Shmon Esrei would be much, much stronger. It's not the same. Not everybody Shmon Esrei, not everybody says the words with the same kavona and with the same emuna and bitochen and everything. That's why not everybody's Shmon Esrei is as effective as the other guys. Now Rav Nissen Zal says, Haklal, the bottom line is, Sheklipas homon amolek hu hamachlish leiv b'nei Yisrael b'soif hagolus. This klip of homon amolek is specifically the koyach that tries to weaken the Jews when they get to the end of the golus already. They're about to be taken out of golus, but eis shehagoula mucheness lovoi, at a time when Hashem is about to redeem us, things are about to happen. It's just that we need a couple of more prayers to complete the building of the Mishkan, so that Hashem's kindness should be activated, and Hashem should turn to us face to face, in other words, to really show us His kindness. And this Amalek, with all of his tricks, he weakens the hearts of the Jews, ke'ilu kvar efes tikva chas v'sholom, as if there's no hope anymore. Me'achar sheroyim arichas ha'golus kol kach, once you see that the golus is going on for such a long time, shezeh kamo shetzoyakim ve'eno yishuam v'kanal, whereby the Jews see that they've been screaming out Hashem for such a long time and nothing's happening, so Amalek tries, even up to the last minute, to weaken us, not to give forth those last couple of prayers which would end the entire Golus completely. And now Rav Nosson Zal brings proof from the writings of the Arizal. V'chein mevor b'kavonas Arizal b'kavonas Purim. We find that the Arizal mentions this, where he speaks about the holiday of Purim. Shehizgabrus homonoz hoya b'soif Golus bovel. That when Homon summoned up all his energies to do his number on Klal Yisrael, it was Bedafka when the Jews were all the way at the end of Golus Bavel. The 70 years were almost over. Bo'ez shekvar hischelat tikun lemalo sheyachzru ponim beponim. The Arizal says that the tikun in heaven, which needed to be made, whereby kavyochol the Shechina and Hashem should be facing each other ponim beponim, whenever there's a pirud, it's called ochar b'ochar, or ochar b'ponim. When there's yichud, real yichud, it's called ponim b'ponim. That yichud had already begun, even, the Arizal says, up above. V'hu rotzo levatel zois. And Haman wanted to try to mess that up. V'alkein hisgaber levatel binyan beis hamikdash. That's why Haman put all his effort to try to prevent the Jews from getting to build over the beis hamikdash. Ayin Shom, look at the writings of the Arizal, where you'll see that this is what the Arizal says, that it was mamish the last minutes of the Golus. Nimtza, what do we learn from this? That bo'es shekvar ha-ge'ula smucha u'mukhenes lovoi, that it's bedavka at a time when the ge'ula is inches away, it's about to happen, u'kvar hischil ha-tikun l'mala, to such a point where the tikun in heaven has already begun, bibchinas ponim beponim, whereby the yichud between Hashem and the Shechina is already activated, ponim beponim, like the kruvim facing each other, who misgaber levatel zois, Amalek summons up all his energy to try to mess it up, umachnis belev, and he tries to inject into our hearts, kilu kol hatfilo yisem larik chasishon, as if all your tefillas are a waste, ve'enam poilim klau v'knal, and all your tefillas aren't accomplishing anything. Proof is, look, you're still in Golus, and the people don't realize that it's mamish about to end. V'alkein rotzo lechalois es Yisrael legamri chasishon. That's why Haman wanted to wipe out the Jews completely. Lahashmid laroi goliabed, as it says over there. Ki ikar koyach Yisrael hualidei tefila. Because we know that the main koyach of the Yidden is through tefila. Shehu bechinas cherev ukleizainoi shel Moshiach. Tefila is compared to a sword, and tefila is called the weapons of Moshiach. Sheheim hatzadikim shebechol dor kanal. This concept of Moshiach is symbolic of the tzadikim of every generation. They are the symbol of Moshiach in the generation. Ve'oz kishehichlish daito melispalel. And then, when Haman is successful in weakening the Jews from davening to Hashem, when he makes them start giving up, when the Jews put down their sword, when they put down their tefillah, our tefillah is called our sword. Remember, Yaakov Avinu said, and the Gemara says, "Betfilosi bakoshosi." We quoted the pasuk, "Roimamois kel bigroinam, v'cherev pifiois piodam." That our tefillah is our double-edged sword. So when we put down our sword, then Haman gets stronger with his sword. We know that Esav was told, you will live by the sword. He also has a sword. That's why Haman wanted to murder the Jews with his sword. Sheyesh lo koyach kishein Yisrael mischaskin betfila shebichnes cherev koyzayne shel Yisrael kanal, because the sword of Haman Amalek has power when the Jews are not using their sword, which is their koyach hatfila. Ki bezman shein hakoyl koyl Yaakov oz vahayodayim yidei Esav k'mo yishom razal. The Gemara quotes a pasuk. The pasuk says hakoyl koyl Yaakov vahayodayim yidei Esav. The voice is the voice of the Jews, and the sword and the hands are the hands of Esau. The Gemara says, either or. If the Jews are using their voices to daven Tashem, then Esau's sword is powerless. Esau's hands are powerless. And if we don't use our coil, our voice, then Esau's hands become powerful. The Maccabim were 99.9% tefillah, and the bitsua was with physical action. Nice. But their koyach and their faith was in their peh.
But they still had that point, 1% or whatever, of action.
Right, correct. Okay. In fact, there's a chapter in Likutei Moran, Torah Chof, in Likutei Moran Chelek Aleph, Rabbeinu Zalveya speaks about conquering Eretz Yisrael, and he shows why it is that sometimes, well, if the Jews are powerful enough in their koyach hatfilah, they don't need anything from anybody. But if their koyach hatfilah isn't bishleimus, then they have to go to Edoim to borrow from Edoim a sword with which to wipe out their enemies. There's a whole discussion of this in chapter 20 in Likutei Moran. And that's why it says the Jews went to Edoim and they said, we're going to cross through your land, we won't drink your water. Why did they want to go through Bedafka, the land of Edoim? to get from Edom the koyach of the cherev that they would need to be manish the Rishonim. In that chapter in Likutei Moharan, there's major discussion about that. Yes. And in Likutei Halachos, he gives some examples of that. There is such a thing, for sure. So that the highest degree of success is when the Yidden don't have to use that at all. When the tzaddikim, who with their tefillah alone, poil the Yeshua, and there's no physical, they don't have to take anything from Esau. But it's very rare that you have that kind of shlemus. So that in most cases, it's like you said, you need both. Yes. I believe it's right.
You have the example of the Gulf War.
Yes.
When we didn't really do anything. All exactly. We did, the whole country, the same thing to do it.
That's another example of Malach Plinasis Aide Echerim, where the work was done by others. For sure. It seems that there are all kinds of different bechinois of this. In that chapter of Likutei Moharan, he speaks about it, and the Mefoshim and the Likutei Halachos on that discusses this, that depend, you know, you can't assume, some people assume they know the plan for, they learn a Gemara, and this shows what the Jews are supposed to do, and if they're doing differently from this, they're doing the wrong thing. And they don't know that from one Gemara, you don't paskin all the halachas and everything. Notice, you have to know that very often in the Torah itself, there are alternatives, and in every situation there's a different program. And you've got to have a very broad perspective to be able to know exactly what the formula is for this situation, this particular situation. Now, Rav Nosson Sal is going to start explaining in more detail how the Gemara, what the Gemara says are the reasons why Haman was able to get at the Jews. The Gemara mentions three things that the Jews did wrong at the time. And Rav Nosson Sal here is going to show how all three are a reflection of a weakness in tefillah. Based on how Rav Nosson describes tefillah in this chapter in Likutei Moharan that we're dealing with here now, Torah Beis and Likutei Moharan Chelek Aleph, Rav Nosson Sal is going to show how the things the Gemara mentions are all a reflection of pigam in tefillah. Watch. Rav Nosson Sal says now, ki ikar his kabrusoi hoyo alidei, the main hisgabrus of Haman against the Jewish people was because of the fact that they had bowed to an idol during the time of Nebuchadnezzar, during those 70 years of Golus. That's one reason that the Gemara gives. A second reason, val shenehenu misudo sheloisei arosha, also because the Jews attended the feast, this major, major spectacular feast, the 180-day feast of Achashverosh, and they had pleasure from that. And number three, Val Shenichshelu Benoshim Nochriyos, and also the fact that the Jews fell victim to non-Jewish women. These were three crimes that the Gemara mentions as to which what caused Haman to be able to rise to power. Ukamayisham Razal, as the Gemara says, Now Rav Nosson Sal explains, Shekol ha-pigomim ho'eile heim b'chinas pigam avoidas ha-tfila. All three of these are a reflection of a defect in tfila. Ki hishtach avu letzelem shu avoidas zoro kfirus ze hepech avoidas ha-tfila shi'emuna kanal. Bowing to an idol, which is called avoidas zoro, is the opposite of tfila, which is called avoidas shebelev. Tefillah is holy avoida, and idol worship is unholy, is the opposite of that. So the pigam in bowing to the idol reflects a pigam in tefillah. Next, the nichshelu benoshim nochriyos, this that they fell victim to the non-Jewish women, shehu pigam abris, which is a concept of pigam abris, zehu pigam hatefillah. That's also a pigam in tefillah. Shehi bechinas cherev dikdusha, because tefillah is compared to a sword, a holy sword, shetluya betikken abris, which is dependent on the tikken abris of the person. The effectiveness of a Jew's tefillah is based on the Jew's level of purity in tikken abris. Bechinas, as Rabbi Nazal in this chapter in Likutei Moharan quotes the pasuk, chagoyer charbecho al yorech, that where do you attach your sword? You tie the sword around your loins, the yerech area, which is the issue of tikkun abris. Rabbi Nazal says that tefillah is called bechayra. Who is the one who lost the bechayra? Reuven lost the bechayra al yidei shechilel yitzu yoviv, which was classified as a concept of Pegama Bris, he disgraced his father's bed, and Yosef HaTzadik acquired the Bechira as a result of Tzadik, as a result of passing the test with Potiphar's wife. He acquired the Bechira, which is Tefillah, the Koyach HaTefillah. So the fact that the Gemara says that the Jews fell victim to non-Jewish women implies Pegama Tefillah. Again, next, number three, and the fact that they had pleasure from the meal of a goy's food, ze bechinas pegam hamishpot. Rabbi Nezal, in that chapter in the Kutumran, says that a sword, tefillah is a sword. With a sword, you have to know how to be able to strike at the heart. Otherwise, you can have a sword and still not be effective. You stab a guy in his arm and in his leg, and meanwhile he's punching you in the head. He can kill you before you kill him. So Rabbi Nezal says over there that even with a sword, you have to know how to strike bullseye for the heart, for the center. And Rabbi Nezal says that in order to be able to do that, you need mishpat. Because mishpat means a sense of judgment, a sense of pshara, compromise, being able to center yourself. So Rabbi Nezal says over there that one of the important ingredients for tefillah is mishpat. Now Rabbi Nosson Zal says here that the act of eating improperly, eating from a goy's food, is a concept of pigam in mishpat, which means pigam in tefillah. Shezoichen al yedei tzdoko, kama shekosu sham ba'toranal. Rabbi Nezal shows in that chapter in the Kudamran how is a yid zoicha to mishpat through tzdoko, because there's a pasuk elikim shoifet. Ze yashpil v'ze yorim. Hashem is a judge, and a judge decides who to lower, who to raise, who to take money away from, and who to give money to. When a person gives charity, they're actually performing an act of mishpat. They're subtracting from themselves and giving to the other guy. That's a form. The pasuk says mishpat utzedoka biyakoy. Mishpat and tzedaka go together. So that's why before a person davens, Rabbi Nezal says he's supposed to give tzedaka, because by doing that you're performing the act of judgment which centers your sword. It centers your tefillah, that your tefillah should be able to strike kaviyochel at the heart of Hashem. So now Rabbi Nosson Zal is going to show us that pigam achila implies pigam in mishpat. Ki achila dekdusha hu bechinas tzedaka vochesed. Because when a Jew eats properly, bigdusha, that's a concept of charity and kindness. Bechinas tikkun hamishpat, which represents tikkun hamishpat. Bebechinas tzadik oichel l'soiv hanafshoi. There's a pasuk that says that a tzadik eats to satisfy his nefesh. Bechinas goymel nafshoi ish chosid or ish chesed. There's another pasuk that says that one who takes care of his nefesh is an ish chesed. Kamoy shomar Hillel kisharotza lechoil, as the Gemara says, Hillel, one of the rabbis of the Gemara, when he was about to eat, what did he say? Ezel ve'ekmoil chesed im nafshi. I'm going to go do a kindness for my body. I'm going to throw a bone to my body, in a sense. Kamoy shomar azal b'medrash rabba, as is brought in the medrash. Kitzrichim, so Rav Nosson Zal wants to show now how achila digdusha is a concept of tzedakah and mishpat. Note that Hillel said, I'm going to go do a kindness with my body in feeding it. When a person eats bigdusha, not like a zhlub, not for taiva sachila and stuff like that, when a person is measuring what he eats, and he eats just enough to keep the body alive, that's like tzedakah, it's like giving charity to a poor man to keep the poor man living. Kitzrichim lechol b'mido u'b'mishko. Because a Jew is required to eat in a measured way. Bebechinas mishpat, bebechinas yechalkel devorov b'mishpat. As the pasuk says, he supports his words with mishpat. V'ze shekosu. This is why it says in Yirmiyahu Novi, Ovicho haloi ochal v'shoso v'oso mishpat utzdoko oz toivloi. If your father ate and drank, and he performed acts of charity and justice, then he's okay. Note that both things are put together. Eating, drinking, and charity and justice are put together in one pasuk. Because achila digdusha is tzedakah mishpat. That itself is tzedakah mishpat. ki tikkun hamishpat al yedei achila dikdusha, because the ability to judge properly comes from eating in a kosher, in a holy way. V'zehu bechinas. This is why the pasuk says, Ashrecho eretz shemalkecho ben choirin v'sarayich bo'es yochelu. Fortunate is the land whose king is a free man, and whose leaders eat on time. They eat at the proper time. Eilecho eretz, woe is to the land whose king is an unjust guy, and they eat in an improper way. Ki hamelech v'hasorim heim oiskin v'mishpat. Because the king and the cabinet, the king and his cabinet, in a sense, they are oisek in mishpat. They're the ones who decide the law of the land. Tzrichim leechol bo'ei subizman. They are required to eat at the right time. Ubeyishuv adas, with sechel, with a peace of mind. Bekdusho betara, with holiness and purity. So that they shouldn't mess up the mishpat as a result of eating improperly, as a result of taiva sachila. V'chein muvon b'hatoyra chodi Rabbi Shimon b'simen samach aleph. We find also in chapter 61, in the first half of Likutei Moran, Rabbi Nezal writes there, shaydei moisrois achila nivgam hamishpat, that when a person eats to excess, that excessive food in the body messes up the person's brain and doesn't allow him to think properly, and it causes the person to have a lack of good judgment. So when the Gemara says that the Jews were nichshal in achila, in the wrong kind of achila, in eating from Sudas HaShveirosh, it means they were poigim in stoka and mishpat, which are two of the main ingredients in tefillah. V'alkein osur lechol koidem atfilah. Rav Nosnal says it's for this reason that the Shulchan Aruch and the Zohar Kodesh emphasize so much that a Jew is not allowed to eat before Shachris. Kama shekosuf lo yiseichlu al adam. Do not eat before you've prayed for your blood. Kidei shaloi lifko in b'mishpot aydei achila. It's because when a person eats improperly, it messes up the mishpot. Shaydei ze nifkama tefila chas v'shalom, which messes up the tefila. Because one of the main things that strengthens the tefillah is tikkun hamishpat.